better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
It's just finally great to have football, to have press conferences. I know that not all the practices, or at least the entirety of the practices, are open to the media. But at least we have some things from these press conferences and from those first 20 minutes of practice to take away from.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. Like you said, unpadded practices, media day Saturday. Supposed to have been a wet, nasty, but like Wednesday or Thursday last week, the forecast was awful for the weekend. And they got a little bit of rain during Saturday's practice, not enough to slow down the team or even move them inside. But, the weekend was really pretty good compared to what we were expecting. And nothing happened yesterday. No practice scheduled yesterday. They're back at it tomorrow. So I know camp's begun. We've got to see some things. We got to video some guys running around in helmets only, in shorts. But, here in a day or two, we'll really have some football practice to talk about.
Yeah, and I know that's the exciting part, is when they actually get to be in pads, because as Chad Moore said, everybody looks like an All-American in shorts and helmets. I mean, right. Let's just be honest about it. But that's where you're really going to separate a lot of the men from the boys when it comes to what they're going to try to accomplish in fall camp. And, of course, one of the biggest questions is going to be about the quarterback situation and the timetable there. And that's something that I think is fascinating, and where a lot of fans, at least from the perspective that I've seen, a lot of fans are uneasy about this quarterback situation, not because they don't feel like it's going to be better than what it was last year. I don't think that's it. I think it's just the handling of it, because a lot of fans, and even us here on the show, we've talked about it a lot, that we felt like the handling of the quarterback situation in the beginning of the season and even in fall camp was pretty detrimental to the team in the early going, where you couldn't find a starter. You threw guys in and out. Some guys started. Some guys started the second half. Some guys didn't even play at all when the team was getting worked by North Texas. There was just, especially there in the first three or four games, the way that was handled was pretty bad. And you knew that even though neither quarterback were setting the world on fire, you knew that Ty Story looked to be the better option there in the early get-go. But yet, that didn't really get going until midway point of the season, and by then it was almost too late, where you couldn't really salvage anything from that point. So I feel like that's where fans are going to want to hear every time Chad Morris meets with the media or Joe Craddock or whoever. It's like, okay, cool for that, all that other stuff. Who's the quarterback? Well, I think that's going to be the question.
And we'll talk with Clay about this too, but for me, I'm interested in what you guys think. For me, it's because both of these guys are unknowns. I mean, at least we knew a little bit about Cole Kelly going into the early part of August last year. Coaching staff knew what they'd seen on film, but they didn't know him as a player on the field. They hadn't been through a season with him. And much the same with Starkle. Now, they've been through it with Ben Hicks at SMU, but the fans here, I mean, we've got less, I don't know, is trust the right word? I'm trying to say, we're not as comfortable because, A, what we've been through as a fan base, but B, we don't know anything about either one of these guys other than one guy spent some time at A&M, and I heard Ty talking about this Friday. He won one game there in SEC play.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not all get carried away until we see a little more here.
Yeah.
One SEC win.
It was against Ole Miss, too.
Yeah.
So, it's not like it was a huge game or anything.
But he's here. And then Ben Hicks, we know nothing about this guy other than he played for this coach at SMU. So we're just all hopeful at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
I understand why everybody's kind of ready to get to the end. And like you said, last year, if they'd have named a starting quarterback earlier, maybe some of those non-conference losses, maybe a North Texas loss, maybe the Colorado State game, maybe some of those games at least get you to four wins last year, where it's not good, but it's not shameful.
All-time worst.
Historic lows like we saw last year.
Yeah. That's where it's at, because I feel like most people can be confident in saying, though, that the quarterback situation, as far as talent goes, is better now than what it was a year ago. I think that there's no disputing that, because, yes, you don't know much about these players, but what you do know is that somebody like Starkle was good enough to start at Texas A&M for a period of time, and did have legit SEC experience as far as going up against. Now, I know he only won one game against SEC, and that's correct. But it's still more than what you feel like you had last year. Same with Ben Hicks. Ben Hicks played at SMU. Now, it's not an SEC school. You get all that. But the familiarity with Chad Morris and the fact that he actually is, a redshirt senior at this point, so he's had a lot of experience playing college football and leading a team, that's where you're hoping that comes into play. And both of those things, again, they did not have last year. So you know that it's better. You just don't know how much better it is. And that's where people are at.
Do you trust these coaches more now than you did a year ago?
That's the question.
Well, I'm asking you.
Do I trust them?
Yeah.
I don't think that there's any reason for me to say one way or the other. The only thing that I trust them in is that they went out and got better guys. They did do that. But as far as trusting them to make the right decision to start off the season and make sure they have the best guy playing, no. Because the one thing I've seen, the little evidence I have, is it wasn't handled the right way.
And if you just said yes, I was going to challenge you. See, to me, you gave the correct answer.
Yeah.
And no, I don't trust him any more today than I did a year ago. I don't know if I trust him less. And maybe I do trust him a little bit less because you went 2-10.
Yeah. Trust isn't really a big thing when you go 2-10.
Right. As Chad Moore says, you got to earn it.
Yeah.
You got to earn it. So it'd be an interesting discussion over the next week or two. And I think it's going to be the state's discussion over the next few weeks until Ben Hicks, Nick Starkle, somebody, John Neighbors, his name starting quarterback.
Yeah. And they're going to feel, at least Razorback fans are going to feel like, all right, this is the guy. See how it goes. But here's my biggest problem, because I think we talked about it also last year when we were at this point in time in fall camp. When you look back in the previous 10, 15, 20 years of Razorback football, there wasn't a lot of times where you had a legit quarterback battle. When Austin Allen, before that, he was the best guy on the team because Brandon Allen had left. When Brandon Allen was on the team, he was the best guy on the team. When Tyler Wilson was on the team, he was. And Ryan Mallett, I think that was the closest thing they probably had, was Ryan Mallett and Tyler Wilson there in 2009 when they were trying to figure out who was going to be the quarterback then. Casey Dick there. Mitch Mustaine ended up winning the job, but that was a whole debacle there.
Been pretty cut and dry.
Right, for the most part.
Until Ty Story, Cole Kelly.
That's right. And then the way the fans reacted to that was almost because you didn't have any quality there. Like you had a quarterback battle, but I don't think it was a quality quarterback battle. This year, you're hoping that this quarterback battle you have is actually a quality one. And you're hoping that the coaching staff will make the right decision in starting the guy game one. Because here's the thing, Tommy, as we learned from last year, and again, we haven't seen a lot of times in Arkansas, but at least learning it from other SEC schools and other big-time college football programs that had true quarterback battles, if the guy that they go with, if it's just by a nose that he's the better guy, the first indication of trouble, though, fans are going to switch on and say, bring in the other guy. He's going to be the biggest hero, the backup quarterback, if that ends up happening.
It always is.
Yes.
Everybody's favorite player is always the backup quarterback.
Right. And that's what Razorback fans are going to find themselves in a situation, because it ends up being Ben Hicks, and say that, because I think they're going to beat Portland State no matter who's the starting quarterback. But say if he's starting quarterback, they beat Portland State or whatever, and then they go on the road to Ole Miss, and then he's struggling there in Oxford. You don't think the fans are going to be clamoring, all right, let's see a new quarterback by halftime. You know, if he's not leading the team down the field for scoring, if he's struggling against an SEC defense, that's immediately where people are going to go. And that's where I'm going to find it curious if the coaching staff switches their decision. Doesn't ride or die with their guy that they decided was the best one, or do they feel comfortable? Well, do they feel confident in themselves that they're making the right decision?
But I've always been a guy that believes the coaches know more.
Yes,
we don't know more as fans. We may think we may have more opinions than the coaches, but they see more, they know more, they've got more information, they make better informed decisions than we do. So you know, when you say ride or die with your guy, there's a reason it's their guy. I've always believed that. You know, some fans believe they know more than the coaches. Some media members believe they have a better idea who should be starting at a certain position than the coaches. There's a reason that the coaches have made the decision they've made. And it's because they watch 20-plus hours a week of practice. They see everything that we don't see. All we see is what shows up on game day. But to that point, game day is all that matters.
That's right.
And that's kind of what we saw with Ty Story last year is, boy, when he stepped in the game for that first time, there was a noticeable difference. How can you not be starting this guy? And sometimes there are those players that just, when the lights come on, they're a different cat.
Yep. And That's why you need the game experience. That's why it's. But here's the thing, though, too, Tommy. Say if that's the case, I mean, how much are you going to learn against Portland State? Because Ty Story looked really good against East Illinois or whoever it was.
That's why
last year.
Spent the last 6 months talking about the Ole Miss game.
Yeah. And why that's the game that's going to decide how far this team has come, how ready they are for SEC play, yeah. and which quarterback's going to be in the best position.
Even though we're supposed to take it one game at a time, mm-hmm. we're only focused on Portland State one game at a time. We'll focus on Ole Miss after the Portland mm-hmm. State. Yeah.
Yeah. The old coach speak.
Yeah.
Do you have a problem with me looking ahead to the show the day before the Portland State game? Or do I need to take this one show at a time as well?
I think we need to look ahead to the Ole Miss week.
Yeah.
Start planning it.
Start
who are we having on?
That?
Who
yeah.
are our guests?
Yeah. Would that be frowned upon, though? I'm not taking it one show at a time, Tommy. Is that going to be frowned
no.
upon here?
We get the luxury of not taking it one show at a time.
That's right, because if we screw up one show, there's always tomorrow. We can always make up for it then. But we're going to have some fun today, of course.
We can do about 260 of these babies a year.
That's right.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Once again, Clay Henry, publisher of Hogs Illustrated, joins us. And, you know, Clay, something that we were discussing also was not just about leadership, but about culture. And I'm sure you noticed it, too, that when Chad Morris was meeting with the media on Friday night, he had a lot of quotes. But the quote that he got most passionate about, the one that he really got descriptive about, was about the buy-in from last year and how he felt like the coaches and the players, especially the upperclassmen, just didn't have enough time to get all of that turned around and all of them on the same page as the coaches and vice versa. I feel like that was a very interesting description of how he put it, instead of just having it to say, well, there's just players that didn't buy in. It wasn't that they said they just didn't buy in. It was just they didn't have time to make it work.
Didn't have time. You're right. And I can remember talking to Yolder Froholt and Santos Ramirez, and that I had spent, maybe a day with Chad Morris, where that's what he talked about. And he says, it's easy when you've recruited them all, you've been in all their homes, they know who you are, they know what you're doing, how you operate, they know all your coaches' staff, because he said if you go through that 2-year process, then you bring them in, it's in one by one, they all have that throughout the team, whether they be upperclassmen or the younger players, they get you. They understand what it is they're being asked to do. And it's almost like a feel. And he says, unfortunately, what I'm going to have to do over the next few months, and this was maybe in January, is that I'm going to be on the road recruiting. I'm going to be going to Razorback Club meetings. All this is stuff that's important. And I said, it's part of what, we do. But he said, all that time, really, if you were, say, a high school coach, you'd be spending it, in the field house with these guys. So that 6 months lead up, you had all this built in to where, by the time you get to football season, you've got that closeness because they know you. But the NCAA rules don't allow, us to have these practices, more than these 15. Like when he said, when I was in high school, each new team, he says, we practiced. Coaches could work them out every day. And he said, it's almost unlimited in Texas. And he said, so the buy-in is going to be tough this first year. Yeah. Now, I'll go back to, I think y'all were kind of headed this direction a little bit, to the Petrino era. Same thing happened. And it was, and I think it happened somewhat, the first year with Bielema. But I can remember Petrino saying, I don't want any leaders this first year. I don't want them to be leaders as far as players. I want them to be followers because they don't know what we want. They can't lead. And I was talking with TJ Smith yesterday, and he's a senior. And he said, we didn't have the leadership council the first year. He's on it now. He's one of the, handful of seniors in this group. And he said, Coach Morris told us that we couldn't have a leadership council because he didn't really figure that any of them knew how to lead, that they have to watch for a year. Petrino said the same thing. They're going to have to be followers. Then the next year that he started to turn over leadership to the team. And And that's what you want is a, you know, player-led team. But it couldn't happen last year. You know, you had some really great leaders and, you know, some guys like Yoder Froholt. I mean, you couldn't have it any better than that. But he's still standing back. Well, what are we about to do? Oh, okay. But it's if he's been in the system for 2 or 3 years, he knows what's going to happen before the coaches even say it. And that's what we're talking about. And then, you know, the buy-in means that you understand everything that's going on, and then you're even participating in the process. And without question, you know, the leaders on this team participated in, you know, the decisions on, you know, are these uniforms, you know, they have Arkansas across the chest, are these what we want? And absolutely they are. But, you know, it's just a long, drawn-out thing that it's just not any fun that first year to get it going. And I think if you go back and you talk to anybody that was at Alabama, Saban's first year, and they struggled, that it was, I bet that was a severe buy-in deal. You know, so it's not like, you know, it's like, you think everybody liked what Saban brought in and handed them? No, I don't think so. So it just takes time, and it's the kind of double whammy. You're not very good at quarterback, not very talented in some other place, and then, you know, it doesn't go very well. Yeah. But it's just a natural thing when you have change.
Yeah. You know, it's hard when someone new is holding you accountable, but you're not sure whether or not that person really cares about you and cares about your goals and your interest and where you're trying to get. And that's what happens when you have a coaching change. Someone new, whether it's a position coach, strength and conditioning coach, head coach, there's a new group holding you accountable as a player. And
well,
I think
Tommy,
that's tough when you got to know those people care about you and yeah, understand what you're after.
When you get chewed out by somebody that you don't know, it doesn't really go well.
Nope.
Now, sometimes I get chewed out somebody I know, and it doesn't go well either. But you got at least a chance. You know the person loves you and cares about you, and you built all that in during the recruiting process or, you know, for a year or two, and you've seen that, oh, he can get after me on the field. But as soon as we're out, he's like, he's asking me about you know, Aunt Jessie. You know, it's like Aunt Jessie's in the hospital and he knows Aunt Jessie. And, you know, that's the person that raised me or, you know, whatever. And, you know, it's like, hey, you know, it's okay. You had a bad day, but, you know, let me give you a big hug around your neck and let's go get some dinner. And that's, you know, that was the Wilson Matthews way. And I wrote about a little bit about that last week. Man, he was brutal. You know, in late 50s and 60s on those Arkansas players, but they knew he loved them. And it was like, he's just pushing us to make us better. He doesn't hate us out here. Now, we hate him when we're out here, but we know that, and that's what you have to be, have the relationship built so that then they can be the tough love.
Yeah, and it's funny, Clay, because I feel like in a lot of situations, especially the Bobby Petrino one like we brought up, I know that that's the one that we keep discussing, but I think it's very important to compare it because I remember talking to Riddell Krim, who was a guy that I was good friends with in school and had a lot of classes with, and I remember asking him just about Petrino. I was like, do the players actually hate Petrino as much as like the people from the outside think that they do? And this was actually after Petrino was already fired, and he was a defensive guy, so he wasn't even on the offense side of the ball. He's like, yeah, we all hate him. We can't stand the guy. He's the biggest jerk I've ever seen in my life. But we don't care because we win. You know, and I feel like a lot of things can be overlooked when it comes to how much a coach actually cares about you and all that. Obviously, you want it to be a perfect world. You want the coach to care about you. I think that that's all what everybody wants. But at the same time, though, a lot of that can be overlooked if the results are coming in and you're being really successful as a program. Unfortunately for Chad Morris last year, there was no success. There was no results, at least ones that people felt good about. But once the winning comes along with it, it's a lot easier to have a lot of players buy in or be in the culture and be on board with it because they know that once they do, they can be a part of something that's actually going to create success.
Well, you want to look good. And if this is the guy that makes you look good, I mean, it's just – hey, it's just like, I don't really care for you, John, but
right,
but that intro a while ago, man, you made me look good, and I can go with you now.
Yeah, that's why I did it.
Now, Now, off the air, we're going a different direction.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'm not sending you any Christmas cards this year or anything like that.
The most transparent radio show in America right here.
That's right.
No, I'm just, you know I'm joking.
Oh, I know. I know, Clay. Well, here's the thing. It's going to take, you know.
I saw you Saturday at Media Day, and there was part of me that wanted to run over there and hug you and say, I'm glad to see you, John. But I didn't. I went the other way, didn't I?
Yes, you did. You certainly did. You certainly did. But you know what, Clay? Just like
then I thought, just like then, there was somebody that says, "Aren't you doing radio with that guy?" Yeah, but you know what? He might look maybe look good on the air, but I hate him.
Well, here's the thing, Clay. Just like with the Razorback football program, we got to build the culture. We got to build the buy-in. It's just going to take us some time.
It's a trust factor. We got to grow into. Yep.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think it happened. We all experience it in life, whether it's new boss comes into work, we start a new job. I mean, Clay, you've been through transitions with Hogs Illustrated, with different ownerships. I mean, it's just part of life where you've got – and I think this is a life lesson. These guys will have to, you know, deal with these situations. Just it will be work rather than football. And for some of them, it will be football when they go into the NFL. It's just part of life when you have to deal with new people holding you accountable, new cultures, new systems – you know, just knew everything, and you better be able to cope with it. And this is a great way to learn it at a formative year. So,
yep. Hey, I think it was three different times somebody said, "Hey, I know you got the pictures up on the wall in this office, but this isn't your office anymore. Sorry." It's like, well, where is my new office? Well, we don't know yet, but just get your stuff out of here.
Yeah.
So
you're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
The give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
JT text in from Hot Springs says, Clay Henry just got me excited about this football team. We have a Heisman finalist this year, and we'll become the second ever two-time Heisman winner. 9 wins this year, college football playoffs the following 2 years.
Way to go, Clay.
Well, I always tell you, I know a lot about the Arkansas team. I don't know as much about the teams they're playing. And if I was watching LSU's practice or Alabama's or Georgia's or Florida's or you name it, I probably would feel – You might not be able to they might have to give me some Valium to do radio.
You may be getting an IV, you know, out there with some of those guys that are overheated. So
like let me give me a helmet. I'm ready.
All right. So let's get to a few other notes from the first two practices. I guess one thing that we need to get to early, Noah Gatlin, Arkansas's redshirt freshman offensive lineman from Jonesboro, has apparently had an ACL injury and is going to have surgery, and looks like this is a season ender, Clay.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that was the position that was just wrecked with bad stuff. You know, Dylan Hayes, you know, didn't make it through the first really 5 days of camp with the back problem. He ended up, you know, retiring from football because of the injury. You know, there was, you know, well, they lost another guy because of a concussion, a reoccurring problem, and it just went on and on, it seemed like. I was talking to Dalton Wagner, and it's like Saturday, 10 days in, he got an appendectomy, and he goes, "What's that?" He said, "I didn't even know what an appendectomy was." And he says, "I, I'm on the shelf." And he said, "I'm already having trouble keeping weight and lost a bunch more weight." Now, as far as just Noah Gatlin, you know, he was running second team behind Wagner, but he was a guy that whoever won that position, it probably, if, say Wagner wins it, he started out one, so you assume that might be how it turns out, but Gatlin might have beat him out. They thought that highly of him, and he was definitely what they say is in their top seven, and they might have flipped him over to right guard and you know, let him battle with Shane Clinton, you know, thinking that he might still get on the field. So he was that highly regarded. And, you know, in fact, if you want to go to the other side, that's kind of the same way they look at Myron Cunningham. Is like, all right, he's going to battle with Colton Jackson, but if Colton wins that spot, they're going to put him against Austin Capps and see if he can win that. So, you know, we're talking about those, you know, those players are special enough that they want to get him on the field. Well, that's not going to be the case this year with Noah Gatlin. He's done for the year. And I guess he's having surgery today. Isn't that what y'all are hearing?
That's what we're hearing. Yeah. Nothing official on that. That's from someone who lives in Jonesboro that listens to the show. So,
and good enough for me, right?
So I wouldn't call that a sourced report by any stretch. But it's someone that knows the family that listens to the show in Jonesboro.
Yeah, we reported yesterday that he's out for the year with ACL, which that's, you know, that requires surgery. You know, the thing about surgery with ACL, they usually wait till the swelling goes down a little bit. So whether it's today or, you know, the end of the week or something, that's, you know, that's coming.
Well, and it's funny too, Clay, because, you know, when anytime you have an injury, you never want to see it, but especially at the offensive line position where depth is so important, and we know that their depth has increased from what it was last year. So we know that's the case, but it certainly seems like when keeping this team healthy, of course, is essential, but a guy like Noah Gatland, I'm curious to see how the coaching staff's going to handle this at a position where it's like, all right, you just lost one guy. Are you going to try to change some things to keep these guys from, you know, maybe having as much contact, maybe going through drills a certain way to try to adjust it, to try to prevent injuries? Because I don't think there's 100% prevention, because, I mean, for crying out loud, Noah Gatland is a non-contact injury. I mean, that's nothing.
He didn't have pads on
yet. It's nothing really can do to prevent it, but it makes me wonder if this coaching staff will ever change how they handle things to make sure that they keep guys 100% healthy for the season.
No, I think they've got their plan, and I think if you went into Chad Morris's office or any of the coaches, they'll have a book of what they're going to do for the whole fall, and I bet it doesn't deviate very much. They might tell the players that they've got it all down, that you don't give us this, we're going to put a little more on you today or tomorrow. But I think that what they've got is pretty much structured for the camp. It's just a tough deal, and I mean this is a sport that you're going to have some of those, and you just hope that they don't have too many in the offensive line, because, you know, that's a position or a group that to get good, you got to have the same guys day after day after day, and you have to build a mesh where the guy next to you knows exactly what you're going to do, and you know what he's going to do, and when the stunts and the blitzes, that you have the same reaction to every, you know, pressure point. And so it's unfortunate, but that's what they're dealt, and that's the nature of where they're at right now, that you have significant number of injuries. It will affect the bottom line.
Anything else stand out to you? I know a lot of people want to talk about quarterbacks. You mentioned KJ Jefferson earlier, but anything with the quarterbacks and the comments from Chad Morris or anything you saw on the practice field day one or two stand out to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's when you look at those defensive linemen and the freshmen and, you know, you can't put those, you know, young defensive linemen out there too quick. I mean, the defensive linemen that they brought in this class are special. I mean, you know, it's, you know, we've all talked about the speed of Matau Soli and Rick, Zach Williams, Ricky Williams' son. Junior Soli is Matau's dad. But you just go through some of those insides guys, you know, Carter, Gregory, I'm going to miss somebody, but they're just nasty beasts. And that's they'll get to play a little bit. You know, you can throw them in there four games without losing a red shirt. And I hope that's all that they do, that they apparently have enough depth. It's like a guy that I remember, you know, 4 years ago when he got to campus that Bielema bragged on, but we hadn't really seen or heard much about him. And that's Jonathan Marshall. They're suddenly talking about him like he might be, like freakish, ready to play kind of, you know, defensive tackle. And that's what this team really needs, is somebody that can wreak some havoc in there. I don't know if you remember the guy from Texas A&M that seemed like he was punishing, you know, the guards and centers last year down in Arlington. But that's what this guy has the capability to do with his strength and ability and explosiveness if he understands technique and scheme. And I think he does, but you're going to see him probably play a lot. You know, TJ Smith's one of the tackle, and Sosa Geem is the other. But, you know, he and Isaiah Nichols are, you know, maybe they're geared up to you know, help with this team. And, I think that the ends, Dorian Gerald, Gabe Richardson, Jamario Bell, these are guys that have SEC ability. And you know, they may be finely tuned now, you know, right kind of shape, understand technique, understand what they're doing to be able to, you know, to give you that burst off the edge that, that, you know, changes the games. You know, what's the old adage? You know, it's like the team that, that protects the quarterback and the team that hits the quarterback, that's the one that wins.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, you know, game changers that it feels like Arkansas has not had in quite some time, because you even remember, and I know you do, Clay, that there were certain seasons. Look at the early going in Brett Bielema's year and that 2014 season. They went 6-6. But there was a lot of excitement and a lot of attention paid to Arkansas because, of course, they were staying close in those games. But it was also because they had particular playmakers, even somebody like Trey Flowers, for instance, on the defensive end. The dude was, I mean, every single game, no matter who they went up against, he was making plays. And that's something that Arkansas has missed because, of course, you want playmakers at every position. Everybody wants that. But in this day and age, especially with Arkansas and what they struggled with last year, it's like they're just looking for a couple of those guys that can be at their respective position, be absolute beast, whether it's a defensive end or a linebacker or a tight end, just somebody that has that ability. And that's where a lot of the interest comes from with a lot of these new players. And this another year of development under Chad Morse, you're hoping somebody, and more often, more, I guess, more than just somebody, but you're hoping that somebody can step up and be that type of beast player where no matter who it's against, whether it's Alabama or Portland State, they make plays.
Yeah, I think you just hit a button. How much time we got? Because you just hit my hot button. I mean, you just pushed it all the way down.
That's what I do.
I mean,
yeah.
If you go back to that season, I thought, hey, we've got a magic man pushing the buttons, Rob Smith. He's got it dialed in, and he is a great one. You know, and but you know what it was? It was Trey Flowers, Darius Filon, Martrell Spate.
Mm-hmm.
Tevin Mitchell. Tevin was playing the nickel, but you had, that was the weak side of that defense, and all of them were in the NFL the next year. Every one of them, made a roster, and it was incredible to watch. And you thought, well, he's blitzing here, he's doing this. I mean, this is beautiful stuff. And then all at once it stopped, and then I thought, well, we've lost the magic. We don't he doesn't understand how to coach. And then Paul Rhodes, everybody that's in my background, my network of people that I know, told me that Paul Rhodes, great coach, not a good coach. And, you know, they changed defense. It was all about scheme. Guys, those are all good coaches. But if you don't have the right difference makers, the guys that you're talking about that can wreak some havoc, that have speed, size, change of direction, I mean, those are the guys that – it becomes really easy. And I watched Kevin Steele coach the defense at Auburn the last couple of years, and their defensive linemen, they would not be blocked. I mean, you know, you go back to, you know, watching Dan Hampton and Jimmy Walker and Dale White play, you know, in the mid-70s. You know, Harold Horton told me, he said, hey, we didn't have to do a lot. Those guys couldn't be blocked. I mean, they would they would grab the offensive line, shuck them, and say, here I am, guys. You know, their linebackers just had a field day. That defense was stout, but it's you have to have difference makers, guys that will not be blocked. You know, you put a double team in, they split it.
Yep.
And that's what Filon did. And, you know, it's like, well, Martrell Spate made a lot of tackles. Nobody ever touched him because they're worried about Flowers in Filon.
Yeah, they couldn't get the block to the next level, you know.
Yep.
Tackle couldn't
get out
there.
I told you, you pushed my button.
Yeah.
You pushed it.
Well, no, it's great conversation for sure, and I know that we're up against it, but the one final thing I wanted to say on this, too, is that there were games, I remember against Ole Miss with Trey Flowers, they had three guys on him, and he still went through it. A great player, multiple great players will make a coach look really good.
That's why he's a pro now.
That's
Clay.
Right.
Now they call that the Bubba Smith School of Defense, you know, it's like, just grab them all and keep throwing them out until you figured out which one's got the ball.
Yeah. Because you remember Rob Smith, everyone thought he was just the next thing of defensive coordinators.
And he's good, but you know, if you had the players.
It's right. If you have great players to go along with it, you're going to be made to look like a great coach.
He went up to Minnesota, and they had no defensive players. It didn't go well.
Yeah, I could imagine.
So, but that's the way it is for everybody.
That's right.
You become an average coach when you got average players.
I have just one question for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready for this my whole life.
Welcome to the most incredible 2 hours of your life. Here he is. The Clay Henry
had to give the proper introduction to Hogs Illustrated publisher Clay Henry. We're going to start just playing that every time he comes in. Maybe top of the hour, I guess.
I feel left out now.
Yeah.
We've never had anything like this for me and you.
Well, because we're not on the same level, Clay, as just
I know
yet.
It. Yeah, but you're a millennial. When does that ever matter?
True.
You just want the hype without any of the earning it, you know.
But the thing is we can't mix each other's intros because then it wouldn't sound as good. It wouldn't be as special.
I guess so.
Besides, when you have the John Cena theme going along with it, it helps out.
Clay, is that the prop? Is that the best intro? You've done this for 24 years. Is that the best introduction you've ever had to a radio show?
It might be the first. So,
oh, it is the best.
Bo Mattingly. Yes. Yeah. It is the best. I'll just say that.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course.
So, I mean, Chuck Barrett, there was none.
Yeah.
You know, and he might introduce you. Sometimes he didn't. Sometimes he just completely forgot. And I'd look over there. I was like, throw my arms up like, hey, what about me? Yeah. And, he's just like.
We're making up for it now.
Yeah, you are. Well, I guess when you get old, some things, you know. Bo always just like. As soon as we started, he'd just start making fun of me. So I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, Clay. I'm just going to be honest about it. Since I'm a little on the younger side, I grew up listening to Chuck Barrett's show here in Northwest Arkansas area where I grew up in Fayetteville. That was all the sports talk we had was Chuck. So I remember listening to you and listening to Dudley and other guys on the show. And I never really dreamed in a million years I'd be in this position now doing a show with Clay Henry. So I just feel like I want to give proper homage.
It's like playing golf with Tiger or something.
To Clay Henry.
John, I got to tell you, I never dreamed I'd be doing a show with you either. So there.
Well, I couldn't imagine that you'd be sitting, if you ever ran into me and be like, you saw an 8-year-old kid, you're like, hey, one day I'm going to do a sports talk radio show with you. I doubt that would ever happen. But
well, I've learned be nice to everybody because they might grow up to be your boss.
That's right.
Just hanging around long enough. Yep. So
that's
yep.
right.
Be
that's
nice true. To Tommy. You know, I was always nice to Tommy. I didn't know why, but I was. So
and now it worked out for you. It's paying off dividends for sure.
So far. Well, I haven't been paid yet. So we'll just say
we'll see how this the rest of this hour goes first.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So there's 110 that reported last week. Two practices under the belt so far. They put some pads on today. Clay, just what has happened so far? What has caught your eye? You mentioned the defensive linemen, and we've talked a little bit about the quarterbacks. I think that's what a lot of people want to hear about is, hey, have they picked a starter yet? Have they picked a starter yet? Chad Morris is probably getting tired of that question. But practice number three a little bit later this morning.
Yeah, the players, you know, I like to talk to both offensive and defensive players, not the quarterbacks so much. In media day, I'm like, well, what do the quarterbacks look like? He says, well, every pass hit a receiver either at the hands, you know, away from the defensive back in the perfect spot or, you know, those slants, you know, they're drilling them right in the numbers every time. And our guys are catching them. And, you know, they say that in a way that, well, you know, that's not what was happening, but that's what's happening now. So you got a chance. And, in fact, Dalton Wagner says all we got to do is protect them because they're going to deliver the ball, and it's going to be fun to watch. So Dalton Wagner being the right tackle. And I guess he is the right tackle. That's the other thing because it was going to be a battle supposedly the first two or three weeks to see if it was going to be him or Noah Gatlin. And if Wagner won, they probably will move Gatlin to right guard and let him battle with Shane Clinton. You know, make sure you get your best five on the field. And Gatlin could have been one of those, but I guess he's going to have surgery, you know, either today or soon for an ACL injury that happened. Non-contract contact drill. I mean, how many millions have you heard of that? We weren't hitting, and he blew out a knee. And it's just sad to see. And, you know, it kind of continues the narrative of last year with the offensive line where they seem to lose one every two or three days. So you hope that doesn't continue because that two or three more of something like that in the offensive line and you're right back where you started from. That's my take of the first 2 days so far.
They're trying to put the ones and threes and the twos and fours on separate ends of the field so everybody gets more reps. One or two more of those, and that's going to limit having those four groups out there working together so everyone gets more reps. And that's not just true of offensive linemen. I guess that's true of wide receivers, quarterbacks, everybody. You got to have enough to run each of those four sets.
Yeah, they're going to do that early for a couple of weeks until they can figure out. And it's twofold. One, they want to get as many reps possible in this what should be a great duel between Ben Hicks and Nick Starkle. I mean, that to me, that's number one. But then number two is they've got so many young players that might be more gifted. The freshmen, and so those guys are on the twos, threes, and fours, and you want to give them as much of the installation and not having them watch so much as participate, and you get it on tape, you might get a glimpse of something that you think, well, his time's now. And so that's the other benefit of what they're doing right now.
You kind of touched on it there, but you're also trying to identify who of these true freshmen are worthy of four games, who's worthy of more than four games. So that helps separate
without
some
question,
of that out.
Tommy. Yeah, without question, that's what's going on. And, it's solely ready. Defensive end, he's got that rare burst. And talking to Steve Caldwell, he said, first of all, Junior was his dad who played at Arkansas, was all SEC back in the Danny Ford years, was just a terrific high school coach, and he prepared for him. He says everything that they've done, every step, of course, he was here in the spring. Everything that he's done, he looks like he's done it before. Like, this is not new. This is what I've been trained for. And, the thing you want to make sure is that physically, is he strong enough? Because he was 220 when he got here. He's like 239 now, and it's he's gaining as we go. He looks like a wide receiver as far as his build, narrow hips, but he's starting to add some physical strength. But he is a blur. He's one of these 4-4 guys that. In 2 years, you have this guy for 3 years, so play him this year, and he'll be if it all goes the way I think it is, he's going to be one of these that we're watching on. He gets invited to the combine and all that, and that we're talking in April. Is he going in the first or the second round? Yeah. That's the kind of player he is.
No senior year for him.
No, sir.
Well, it also seems like with the defensive ends, too, we mentioned it earlier in the show and bringing up previous years where Arkansas did have really good defensive ends and the impact that they had. I mean, you look at Trey Flowers, even a guy like Dietrich Wise was that impact type of player that was able to get out there. And then going back to Petrino era, you had guys like Jake Beckett. It just seemed like year after year, at least era after era, defensive ends were always something that you really held your hat on if you were a Razorback fan. But over the past few seasons, you haven't really had that type of player. You've had some decent ones, but nothing that's really been able to make plays and to really change a game. And that's when we talk about playmakers before, defensive end, it is just so important to be able to have an athletic, speedy guy out there, because you're going up against offenses where a lot of times that defensive end has to make a quick decision on whether or not to go inside with the quarterback or to go outside with the running back. I mean, you got to have an athletic guy, sure, but you also have to have a guy that can make quick decisions and the right decisions.
Yeah, and you want him to play technique. And I can remember Jake Beckett thought he knew what he wanted to do and freelanced a little bit, and Caldwell, kind of jerked a nod in his head and made sure that he understood you're going to play the right technique. Because, if you're going wide just because you think that's the angle and you're not holding that, that edge right, he says they're running inside and they're out the gate. So you've got to play the proper technique. You can't just go wide and go after the quarterback. There's some times where the defense calls for something else. But the common denominator in all the guys that you mentioned, both in recruiting and coaching, was Steve Caldwell. And I am fascinated to watch what Steve can do in his second year with some of these guys. And I'm talking about Jamario Bell, Gabe Richardson, and Dorian Gerald, who they got a fraction out of what those guys have as far as their athletic ability. And they just didn't understand what they were doing in that scheme last year. And I think they'll be better. This defense will be better. And I think they're more finely tuned in conditioning, strength. A lot of times, junior college players, it's that second year when you really get something, and maybe second year in the system in Gabe Richardson's case. So I really think that's going to give Soli and Zach Williams a little time to develop, and I think there's going to be some fun stuff with this defensive end group. And like I said, I think maybe the first coach to really explain this in simple terms to me, what football was all about, And it was Bobby Petrino says, the deal is who can hit the quarterback and who can keep their quarterback from getting hit. And he said, all the other things, the pretty things that you think I do scheme wise, he said, that's the bottom line. If your quarterback doesn't get hit, then you can run all the plays that you can, dream up. He said, they're all good. It doesn't matter. He said, somebody else's plays are as good as mine if your quarterback stays upright. And he says, on defense, if you can hit the quarterback, it changes everything. He said, they don't see as good. You get minus yardage plays, you get interceptions, you get fumbles, hit the quarterback. And you just touched on it. I mean, Flowers and, mm-hmm. It was fun to watch. Jake Beckett was, I can remember that South Carolina game. Maybe was it 3 or 4 sacks?
Yeah.
And I mean, he blew up and that pretty much got him drafted, I think.
Yeah. That's why all those guys got paid to play football. Yep. Without going to Ole Miss.
Yeah.
But it's as simple as this. Hit the quarterback, yeah. Guys. He doesn't play as good after he's been hit a few times. Yep. And, I mean, we saw that with Brandon Allen and Austin Allen. I mean, they got hit so many times that you got to keep your quarterback where he's – I mean, what was Ty Story's jersey like after that Auburn game? Well, I mean, it was – I mean, I think they threw that one away. It was green. It wasn't white anymore.
Number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.